I mean, maybe in your downtime you narrate how you kick a puppy. But, like, in combat, you don't, you know, yeah, right. you don't attack the small one first.
Live from the Mundangerous K Street lobbying firm in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 198 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about the lawful evil alignment, and probably getting into a fight. But first the rogue traders deliver a package in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign, and later Vegeta nearly surpasses his rival in the Character Creation Forge.
Total Party Thrill is brought to you this week by D&D Beyond.
Hey, look, they came back.
Yeah, the first time wasn't enough to scare them off.
I'm honestly a little bit surprised.
Yeah, well, disappointed in their judgment. So what is D&D Beyond?
It is a digital resource that you can use with D&D 5th Edition. Basically, you can log on and use an online character builder. You can look up different rules in a rules compendium. It's sort of like having all of the books, but in digital format. You know, all that stuff you want to look up at the table, you can just like do a quick search. And, you know, you can do a lot of that for free.
It's also, yeah, it's more than just the resources themselves. They actually have, like, first-party articles that they write. People like James J. Heck, who is one of the authors from Waterdeep Dragon Heist, is writing, like, daily articles about different things you can use in your games and, you know, different monsters and different things like that.
Yeah, you can also use it to track your campaigns. It's a good tool to help run an adventure. If you do choose to pay for the service, then you get a bunch of different options like unlimited characters in the character builder. And I believe you can share your resources with people in up to three different campaigns. So like we have eight people in our group. So like if one person has a paid subscription, everybody in that group can use it in a particular campaign.
Yeah, the other thing I really like about it is that it lets you add your own homebrew stuff. So if the DM in your campaign creates an item that isn't, you know, in the DMG, you can just add it for yourself and it will go on your sheet. I have also taken a bunch of items that you've given us that are like DMG things but have been renamed. You know, so like maybe a cloak became an amulet. You can just go and rename those things on your character sheet, so you can just track it that way. It's really flexible in what it does. I'm playing a druid, so it actually tracks all of my different summoning animals as well as my different beast shapes.
Yeah, we were there at the table when you were like, guys, wait a minute.
Yeah, I have this pile of spell cards, and I don't need this anymore. Game done, switched up.
Yeah, it's been useful because right now we're playing in Eberron, but especially for like a homebrew campaign setting or campaign settings that aren't currently supported, Planescape, you can basically just like rename stuff so they are lore specific and just like, you know, type in the new information rather than like having to recreate something from scratch.
Yep. So check it out at dndbeyond.com.
All right, Shane, speaking of starting from scratch, where are we in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign?
So the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader game played using Dark Heresy 2nd Edition rules by Fantasy Flight Games and on the Death World Iblis Prime in the frontier city of Meridian. The Rogue Traders have set out to establish a colony in the name of the Holy Throne of Terra and Prophet.
So we recently found out in our Discord that some listeners replay that in their heads as they're listening, and I apologize that you have to hear Shane in your head.
Okay, where are the Rogue Traders?
They're on the Death World Iblis Prime.
What are they doing?
In our mining camp, which is currently reinforced, and we are commencing a drill of a second mine shaft. Look, we made so much money on the first one until it exploded.
Yep, so you've now set off back to Meridian to even the score with the Technogangers who bombed your mining camp, only to find that there is now a counterintelligence cell that is hampering their progress. So you have posed as potential clients, stolen the information of their whereabouts telepathically, and you now have the location of this cell.
The only question now is, what do we do with them? So we consider and, of course, reject a variety of plans and ultimately decide to murder them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you go for poetic justice. You decide that you're going to bomb them.
It's only fair. It's only fair.
So you're trying to figure out the way to deliver a bomb to a group of people who are hyper paranoid and very well trained about avoiding detection and not being booby trapped, trying not to tip them off. So what do you come up with, Ishan?
Yeah, well, we throw out a few options that aren't going to work at all because mainly it'll get us killed and our top priority is not dying. But Flair, brave Flair, proposes an interesting option. He says, how about I use the terrible powers of the warp, open a gateway directly into their location, walk through it with the bomb, and then let it explode, but I will survive because I will use psychic shielding and probably burn a fate point.
He does not intend to burn a fate point. He intends to rely on the Emperor's grace to survive the blast.
Sure, yeah, that was what he was intending, and I think the rest of us thought, and probably burn a fate point. But that's cool.
No, I mean, legitimately, he believes the psychic shielding is sufficient that he can survive the blast of the satchel of crack grenades that he will be bringing into this, you know, hideout.
And, you know, that is mathematically possible. It's true.
Right. So, very reasonably, the rest of the rogue traders are outraged at this suggestion. I think some of you less reasonably are a little jealous that Flair gets to be the glory boy in this situation. But either way, everyone is too distracted to put forth a better plan, so you begin prepping this plan.
I mean, I kind of like the idea of like Flair going in and blowing himself up. I mean, this is exciting. It saves me the trouble.
Right. So Flair sets to weaving all of these layers of protective spells around himself. Trank begins readying a satchel of crack grenades for him to deliver as the payload.
Yep, and when everyone is ready, Flair opens a gate of infinity. And hey, no terrible, horrible psychic phenomena happens, so that's cool.
Good start.
He steps through and ends up in a shabby common area surrounded by a bunch of ganger toughs who have no idea what is going on.
And then the grenades explode. It's huge. It's a big explosion. It's the kind of explosion that you guys are, you know, blocks and blocks away, and you still kind of like feel the ground shake. And everyone inside that hideout is, of course, a pulpy mess right now. Except for
one Ventium Magnus III, because, of course, the Emperor protects.
Correct. So the Astropath does survive the blast without suffering any critical injuries. This one's on the Emperor, you know? Like, I feel like he had to intervene here and make sure that old Flair hung in and survived that blast.
Yeah, but the Emperor and Spider-Man each have one thing in common, and it is that everybody gets one.
Yeah. So they overlooked one risk. After this massive explosion destroys everybody in the room, it then collapses the entire building upon Flair.
And we'll find out what happens to him next week. So this week, we're talking about how to play lawful evil characters. First off, let's start with a brief primer on alignment. Shane.
All right, we've done this 8 times now. You know how this goes. You've got good and evil on one axis. You've got law and chaos on the other axis. Wherever they intersect, that gives you some combination of these two qualities. That gives you your alignment.
Right. So if you're lawful, you believe in order and duty, reliability. You know you can't just do whatever you want or society is going to fall apart.
If you believe in chaos, you believe in personal freedom and flexibility and self-expression. You believe that mindless obedience and deference to authority will crush the spirit.
If you are good, you believe in altruism and respect for life. You are compassionate. A good person will go out of their way to help other people, even if it might result in harm to themselves.
And if you're evil, you are selfish, you are willing to inflict harm, you believe in oppression as a tool to exert your will, you'll seek personal gain, even if it actively harms other people.
Hey, and sometimes because it harms other people.
Well, yes.
All right, so pay attention to that last one because it's important this time. We're talking about lawful evil. You are all the way over on the lawful side of the axis. You are also at the same time all the way down on the evil side of the axis. You pursue both order and self-interest, mostly in equal measure.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be because you are truly selfish and you find that using the law is the best way to make things happen for your own advantage or so that you can avoid punishment that, you know, you kind of deserve.
Yep. You might also believe in order, but have no compunction about how order needs to be imposed. So you could be both the despot or tyrant, or you could be the scheming guildmaster.
Yeah, so one of the most important parts of your personality is going to be your selfishness. When you're looking at possible courses of action, you're going to be thinking, how does this help me? But at the same time, you also need to remember that authority is important to you as well. You can't just go off and do whatever it is you want to for your own self-interest. You need to bow to lawful authority, whether that's because you're kind of forced to because of might makes right, or you know, you have a personal code of honor that like requires that you submit to people in charge.
So in contrast to lawful neutral, you are more than willing to twist the laws to your own interests. The law is not inherently sacrosanct for you.
Right. Like the purpose of the law is to help you get ahead. And, you know, if the law is can be interpreted to your benefit or even you can fool someone into believing that it is to your benefit, so much the better, right?
Right.
But keep in mind, you're also not neutral evil. You want to use lawful means. And, you know, it's sort of up to you why exactly you want to use lawful means. I think pretty much any direction you go with this can be interesting. Maybe it's just because, you know, people can't hit you back if you hit them for a lawful reason.
Right. And then I think something that's also important to lawful evil characters that kind of gets overlooked or tries to miscategorize them is that oftentimes lawful evil characters will be hypocritical, right? They might break laws in order to exert their will. They might rig elections, for example, in order to ensure that their candidate or they themselves actually win. They're still using those laws, right? They're still recognizing their importance. They're just, you know, playing by their own set of rules within that framework.
Yeah, and pay attention to like right on the edges of that alignment. You know, something like rigging an election, it really comes down to your intentions, right? Like if you're rigging an election because you really believe that like the candidate that you want to win is going to be one better for you, but also probably going to like help keep an order to society and maybe that's just, you know, really good for you and keeps other people down, great. But if you're solely doing it because you feel like this person, like, hey, it's my brother and I'm going to rig an election like that, that works really well for me. But you are less interested in the way that, society and the legal system works, then you're probably just neutral evil. Like it simply becomes a means to an end.
Right.
So what are some reasons to play lawful evil characters?
So I think the biggest one is that you want to be a self-interested schemer. It can be difficult to pull off neutral evil because it's hard to convince people to just do what's best for you. But lawful evil, at least you can be like, hey, look, we have to follow the law here. Like, who cares if it's an oppressive state? It's the law here.
Yeah, they're guilty. You know, and it doesn't matter why they stole that. They really need to go to jail.
Right. That street rat had better give that bread that he stole right back to that merchant in the bazaar.
So that I can marry the princess who inexplicably has fallen in love with this street rat.
Right.
It's sometimes helpful for me to think of like traditional sort of D&D devils versus demons. Like with lawful evil, like the devil is supposed to be like this quintessential lawful evil creature. Like, there is no devil that shows up and is like, hey, would you like to sign this contract? Because it's going to be really good for me. And like, I really need to collect some souls. Like, come on, do me a solid here. Give me your soul. It's worth a lot.
Yeah, no, it's very much like a sense of like, you can be trusted to honor the contract. You just have to bet that you are smarter than they are in order to think that that's okay to enter that agreement.
Right. Like, everyone knows you will stab them in the back, but certain criteria need to be met before you are allowed to stab them in the back.
No, they know you'll stab them in the front. But you have the right. decency to stab them in the front.
Not a bad person. Come on.
Oh, you are a bad person. You're still stabbing them. But at least you're predictable.
Hey, no, they deserved it, okay? All right? I stab people who need a good stabbing. That's my job. Okay, so you could also be a lawful evil character who's just a bit of a control freak. Like, the reason that you like the law is you feel better when you are in charge of other people or people do what you say. And, you know, maybe you're big and tough and strong or like really great at magic and it's easy to control people. But another easy way to do that is to basically have the law control them for you. Like, if they are legally bound to follow your orders, then you don't need to waste a spell slot or keep looking over your back.
Another thing you might be interested in is playing a bad guy who is sort of reluctantly working with the party towards more noble ends.
Yeah, you got ordered to. So here you are, and you hate them, and they're stupid, and they suck, and like I hate that I'm out here doing this, but it is my job.
Yeah, you're the guy in the corner who's just like, you know, picking his nails with a dagger or like, you know, picking his teeth with a dagger, and he's like, I feel like I can murder everybody in this room right now, but I'm bound not to, so I can't.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side of that, you could play the bad guy who is reluctantly forced to rebel. Like, maybe you like the fact that, you know, you are a corrupt cop in a like despotic state. But for whatever reason, you know, like your family has been arrested or like, you know, the state is being overthrown. You're sort of forced into being the rebel right now. And so now you have to work with everyone else.
There's also a good case to be made a lot of times for a PC who wants to become the BBEG of the campaign. You know, maybe somewhere around like the mid-teens, you get what you want and betray the party, and now you've become the BBEG. That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, have that conversation with like your GM and probably other people at the table, but it's absolutely a valid character arc. In addition, a valid character arc is just starting as a terrible person and working your way up from the quote-unquote moral bottom and eventually becoming, like, a decent person. But in order for that arc to, like, really pay off, you've kind of got to start off being bad. This works well in conjunction with some of the previous ones, right? You're forced to work with the party, and, like, through their great example, you learn how to be a better person.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe through their terrible example, you learn that I was right all along.
Right.
Maybe you corrupt everyone else.
I think in less traditional fantasy settings, like, lawful evil is a much easier alignment to play off. Like, the closer a setting is to real life, where, you know, the majority of people are just neutral, or like, lawful neutral, honestly, like, the easier that lawful, or the less aberrant that lawful evil, and, like, the less preening that lawful evil has to be,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, you don't have such bright line good and evil in other settings outside of fantasy. It can be easier to play sort of that lawful evil alignment without really sticking out of the group. Like, I'm thinking like something like Knights Black Agents or Shadowrun, where being lawful evil can actually be a huge asset, right? Like, the bagman, who is paying for all of this, like, it's great if he's a hedge fund billionaire. Like, you know, the oppression of capitalism is a wonderful system to abuse to fund your war against vampires for yes. your personal profit.
I mean, you could definitely, there's a definite case to be made that, like, in many of the Marvel movies, Tony Stark is lawful evil.
Yeah, or Batman.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, this is Batman's alignment. And in the 1980s, Superman was lawful evil, too.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll get into this a little bit later, but there is a tendency to want to play lawful evil as like sort of like the cackling mustache twirler, which, you know, you can in certain games and in certain settings that can be fun, but I think it's maybe more rewarding to play them as a real person. Like, if you are on your way to your job in a city and you walk by a homeless person who obviously like is suffering from some sort of like crippling disease and is asking for money, and you completely ignore them, what is that action? What is the alignment of that action? but it's super, super normal.
Mm.
All right. So in an RPG, what are some reasons that a lawful evil character might actually go out adventuring? It's dangerous out there.
To earn a name or a rank or some credibility. A lot of times lawful evil people are very ambitious. So you might be trying to get your start and prove yourself.
Yeah, I like that about lawful evil, that like you are often less held back by emotional ties than other characters. Like, you're not the farm boy who like has to be chased out of his home by orcs. Like, you want to go out there and you like you believe that people who are in charge are probably there for some real reason. So you want to be one of those people who's in charge. So like, go out and earn it. Like, be like, join the army and like, you know, work your way up to general and like show everybody that like you're really important, and then they'll all listen to you because they have to, because you have a rank and you can point at and be like, this is why I'm in charge.
Right. Or the sort of parallel to that is you could have been assigned by just such an authority figure, right? And you're following that order accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's both, right? Like, I joined the army because I want to be in charge. Oh, but I guess I need to start at the bottom, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be an army. I mean, it could be any organization could operate that way.
Oh, yeah. Start, like, accountant level 4.
Sure. So I think that was Ben Affleck's build for that
the
movie.
Accountant level 4, sure. Right. Hey, look, you want to work your way up to hedge fund billionaire who can be the bag man.
Yeah, <it's> accounting, that's the key. You might also have a desire to change the world. A lot of times, like, lawful evil has this desire to establish order in lawless places. It will, of course, be the type of order that they want that selfishly benefits them, but it is still a form of order. You know, this is someone like Immortan Joe or the villain, the Gary Oldman character in like the Book of Eli.
Mm-hmm. Right. Have you seen the world? It would be much better if I was in charge.
Right.
It could be bloodlust. A lawful evil character who's like truly evil, like maybe more evil than lawful, might just really like killing people, but that's not something you can do in an orderly society.
Right.
But out in the wilds, killing those savages, that's no problem. Nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
They give you money for that. That's great.
Right. Yeah.
You could also like really like the comforts of an orderly society because it, you know, lets you kind of be an evil person. And now you're sort of thrust out of society because you haven't necessarily been ordered to do it, but you are required to do it by some sort of higher allegiance. You know, maybe your country has mandatory service and everyone has to go serve or do something useful or go on walkabout or something like that.
This works really well for the like traditional classes that are lawful, things like monk and paladin. Right, it can give you a reason that you would be part of an adventuring party despite being personally rather evil.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, the Order of the Long Death monk can't be the Grandmaster of Flowers in charge of the order unless you've like been out in the world and know what you're doing.
Unless you've taken 1,000 lives.
Yeah, right. I like the idea of counting them all.
Yeah. Well, we rolled over the odometer, so we're not really sure. Is it 1 million or 2 million?
Right. Do babies count as double or half? I forget.
And then, of course, if you want to be lawful evil but still want to fully align with the goals of the party, it's always great to go adventuring to stop a greater evil. You know, you might not be a good person, but there is somebody much worse out there who would make your life and everyone else's much worse.
So part of the fun of playing a character with a real alignment is going to be working through the moral dilemmas that you might be faced with. And it's a little bit tougher with evil characters because they're not sort of built into the adventuring lifestyle, right? Like, you're not wondering, oh, do I kill our enemy? Oh, yeah, you kill your enemy. Come on. Like, they're your enemy.
Also, like, the other problem with moral dilemmas for inherent, like, super evil characters is just like, doing an accidental act of good doesn't make you good, and
right.
It doesn't change you as a person to have done good unless the character is on board for the arc of, oh, it was kind of rewarding to actually help those villagers rather than simply exploit them.
Right. They brought me food for a month.
Right. Yeah, except they paid tribute for years. This is amazing.
You save one village.
It's going to save all the villages. I'll be a lord in no time.
And they don't care that I burn the next village over. Actually, they love that.
Yeah, they took their land, and now they're paying me even more. Basically, the feudal system.
But there are definitely options here for GM, or if you work with a GM. It could be that following the rules is causing you harm for some reason. On the flip side of that, it could be that acting in your own self-interest is going to require you to break the rules. So what do you do here? I mean, it might be that now this is the reason now that you're adventuring, right? Like, I couldn't continue my life of following the particular rules that I was subject to, so I'm out here dealing with different rules.
Yeah, this is how you go from hedge fund billionaire to Ponzi schemer.
Yeah.
So you got to break the rules.
I just needed to move to a different country.
Right.
Is all.
Also known why. Why my uncle moved to Argentina.
Right, because the Mossad was chasing him for some reason.
Yeah, weird. Not my real uncle.
<That's> No. Like,
to be clear, I don't have Nazi uncles.
No, you're too young.
Right. Be at least a great uncle.
But also not that either. let's be clear.
Okay. So another moral dilemma is, it could be that acting in your self-interest will help an enemy, right? So there's a third party that will gain greater benefit than your own self-interest.
And maybe that just makes you super angry.
Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, that's a lot of how our, like in the Morning Glory campaign, how Bastion kind of reasoned that he continued down this heroic path, right? Was just like, I want to be the number one guy in the world, but I can't do that if some ancient evil is ruling everything.
Yeah, or just unmaking it. Ugh, come on.
Right.
this works as a motivation that makes more sense if it's something personal and not necessarily something like money. Like, if you are competing for the affection of a lover, then it makes perfect sense why, even if you get most of what you want, it's not okay if your rival gets everything that they want, right? Because then, like, lover that the two of you are both pursuing, like, you don't get them.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you get, like, you know, his brother, and the two of you will be pretty happy, but, like, that's not the one you wanted. Or their fortune isn't big enough.
Yeah, this feels like a very Game of Thrones type motivation. How about The Prestige?
You mean the movie?
Yeah. Or the book, I suppose.
Where he, like, murders his own selves? Is that the
yeah,
one?
Yeah.
I've never
yeah,
actually
yeah.
seen it. Tell me how this fits.
It's too complicated for that.
Okay. Well, it fits. Go watch The Prestige.
It does, yeah. They're both cutting off. It's about a rivalry between musicians. No, that would be normal. A rivalry between magicians. And it's about the sacrifices that they're willing to make in order to be the most famous, you know, magician.
Oh, right. And he does some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because magic.
Yeah, there's actual magic involved, courtesy of Nikola Tesla.
And sliders, I guess. Kind of.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. It could also be that acting in your own self-interest or following the rules is going to harm the people that you care about. So I think this is an important thing to note. When trying to play a real, like, relatable evil characters are not always alone or loveless people, right? It could just be that your loved ones are more important to you than anybody else's, or maybe to the exclusion of anyone else's, right? As long as my family is okay, things are good. But as soon as my family is threatened, well then, people are going to die.
Yeah. And that is perhaps the most realistic of all motivations and moral dilemmas.
Right. Why does this entire village ping as lawful evil? Oh, because they cared not at all about that other village.
Right. That's why their neighbors are orcs now.
Right.
Paladin's going to have to clean this one up.
Fortunately, I don't need to worry about collateral damage here.
Right. All right, let's talk about some interactions between lawful evil and the other alignments.
Yeah, because your alignment is about how your character interacts with the world, but that's especially about how you're interacting with other people. So I think for lawful evil characters, one of the big interactions that you're going to have with people in the world is how you deal with authority figures. And I think typically, if the authority figure is competent, then you're usually going to be loyal because, you know, that's what you do. You know exactly where you fit into this hierarchy. But if they are incompetent, or if their proclamations are hurting your interests.
Then or they don't like you.
You're right, yeah. You screwed up one too many times, or maybe you're too competent.
Right.
Then they become a rival that you can either overthrow or seek to remove. Like, there are plenty of lawful systems where usurpation is fine. Or, like, political assassination might just be, you know, you get your hand dirty that one time, and I'm still mostly lawful, right?
Right, yep. And then I think the other thing with authority is that you're not subservient to authority broadly, right? Just because you have crossed the border into another state does not mean that you necessarily obey that state's authority, right? That jurisdiction is important.
Yeah, it might be the total opposite, right? Like, as soon as you cross the border, you're here to wreak havoc.
Right. And in fact, you might be unbound by law now that you're no longer in your own jurisdiction. You might feel, great, I am free from the shackles of responsibility. Now it's weapons hot and we're going to solve this problem the old-fashioned way.
Right. I am in no way beholden to the people here.
Yeah. Like, this assassination is sanctioned now.
I like this as a point of contention between, like, the lawful good paladin and the lawful evil paladin of tyranny, where, like, when you're both in the right country, you are serving as, like, lawful order, and then as soon as you cross that the border, the like normal good paladin is still like, well, you know, this is a democracy and they elected this person, and so I think we still need to do what they say, and look, here's speed limit posted.
Yeah, and then the paladin of tyranny and the chaotic evil rogue are just like, we're gonna solve this problem, you keep preaching.
Yeah. Why don't you go take a nap? We're cool.
Exactly. Smite, 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 sneak attack. Problem solved, we can go home now.
Oh wow, that was very helpful, thanks.
You know, I'm really starting to see your point of view in that, as long as your point of view is the opposite direction.
All right, so how's a lawful evil person interact with their enemies?
So I think lawful evil is more likely to be beholden to rules of engagement. You know, they might be unwilling to do certain things or might command a certain respect for enemy combatants simply because of tradition or legal responsibility.
Yeah, like to your point, they might see to eye with the chaotic evil character when you're across the border and, like, rules don't apply here, you know? But if you have a personal code of conduct or code of honor on the battlefield, like, you know, you are a selfish person, but part of being selfish is feeling good about yourself. And in order for you to feel good about yourself because of, like, the way that you were raised, or, you know, because people look up to you because of it, you know, you are an expert duelist and you abide always by the letter of the law in a proper duel, because, like, you will lose face if you cheat.
Yeah.
Even if that means that you might lose.
Right. Or, like, you will ensure that you're always honoring surrenders and treating prisoners of war properly, because you know that you might not always be on the winning side, right? And so selfishly, by maintaining those rules, you will ensure that you get fair treatment if the tables were ever turned.
Oh, totally. Like, I've always thought that, like, the United States Bill of Rights, like, the First Amendment is, like, the most selfish, like, law that you could come up with. And it's kind of brilliant. Like, no, any religion is fine. It's cool. And it literally doesn't matter who's in charge. Any religion is cool. And if the tables turn and we are not in charge anymore, also fine. It's no skin off my nose to be fine with your religion right now, because, like, it's not a big deal. Let's just make sure you don't start burning me at the stake if I ever lose an election.
Right.
Because then I'll have to rig that election.
Right.
On the sort of the flip side of this, though, in the absence of, like, codified rules of war or a personal code, you probably don't really care if your enemies suffer, right? Like, hey, we've got to smoke out the kobolds. Forget smoking out the kobolds. Let's just, like, start a fire in there, burn them all to death, and go in and take the magic weapons that are going to be fine.
Right. Like, we can just cave it in and then dig them out later.
Yeah, we wait 3 days. How long does it take a kobold to starve?
Right.
Well, actually, I know this.
Well, yeah. After that incident back in 81. Another thing to keep in mind is that a lawful evil character is likely to be less disgusted with evil than the average PC will be, right? They might be the advocate for the enemy's point of view in the party.
Yeah, like, you probably can sort of see why the enemy is taking this tactic, or you might be the one to be able to predict that an enemy will take a tactic that other sort of like good-minded characters might not consider just because it is sort of like sadistic or cruel or, you know, horrible.
Yeah.
You're also probably like less grossed out by it. Like, you know, you're the one who shows up at the scene of an atrocity and like can be fine with it because the sight of like dead or tortured bodies doesn't really faze you because like you've been there, you know?
Right. Yep. And then, of course, lawful evil will often take very pragmatic approaches to their enemies, right? So if a prisoner loses their negotiating value, then it's not worth toting them around in shackles. Just kill them and leave them behind, right? Right. You know, like you said, if the kobolds are going to be harder to enter their caverns and fight them one by one, just collapse the caverns and we'll sort it out later. You know,
yeah.
Just the pragmatic and simplest solution is usually on the table for lawful evil because it gets the job done.
Yeah, it turns out Tucker's kobolds was the worst thing to happen to kobolds as a species.
Mm-hmm.
Because I read about them and then decided from now on, kobolds are kill on sight.
Never again. Not even once. All right, so how do lawful evil characters interact with chaotic characters?
I think probably how they react to most other people is like with disdain. They're pretty undisciplined. And that's the spectrum. Like chaotic evil, please stop stabbing people. That is really causing us problems. Chaotic good, please stop helping people. That is really causing us problems.
Yeah. You know, if you could just like control your urges a little bit, you might actually stop cutting off your nose to spite your face. Like, yeah. You might actually get what you want if you could just have some impulse control.
Right. And if you don't stop that, I'll cut off your nose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, like you'd probably view them as like a nuisance or a pest. But consider what you do with that pest. Do you try to control them, rein them in if they're a party member? Do you destroy them because they're an enemy, or because they're a party member?
Yeah, or I mean, do you manipulate them? Right, like
right.
Do you try to bend their behavior to your own gain?
And that's probably the most fun, especially if you're dealing with another party member. Is like. Convince them. Part of the fun is like getting people to do what you want them to do. So just like try to manipulate them.
So how about evil characters?
I think you can go two ways with this. They're a possible ally because maybe you share the same goals, or you're a rival because you might share the same methods.
Right. And then on the lawful side of the scale, I think you're going to see most other lawful characters as potential rival rules lawyers, right? You'll see them as somebody else with the type of respect and grasp of authority that could rival your own. But the flip side is if you have the upper hand and the legal imperative, you should be able to control them rather easily.
As for good characters, aside from being annoyingly good, they're probably actually pretty predictable, right? You are not chaotic evil where good characters are always like trying to stop you from having fun, or they're trying to murder you immediately because you're a threat to everybody. Like the lawful evil character is probably not killing people in broad daylight because that's probably illegal. And even if it's not illegal, you're probably not dumb enough to do it in front of the paladin who will smite you immediately if you do that.
Right.
They're looking for you to like slip up so that they have a reason. And all you have to do is not give them a reason.
Right.
And then, you know, what are they going to do with presented with an option? They're going to do like the selfless thing, of course. And they're not going to take the payment for like saving the village. Well, I'll just, you know, pretend to go to the bathroom.
I'm just going to skip the meeting.
Right. Show back up. And be like, oh, we actually changed our mind. If you don't mind, I will take that payment.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Thanks.
So then... you know, we've used a lot of examples of how this might work with party members, but keep in mind that lawful evil characters, by virtue of being part of the group and playing the game, kind of need to see party members slightly differently from simply their alignment.
Mm-hmm.
So it is probably going to help the game if the party members themselves are the only people you care about, or are at least amongst the people you care about.
Yeah, we've talked about this with like... you know, if you have the orphan character, it's useful if like the party becomes your found family. Like, that works really well for a lawful evil character. And I guess just evil characters in general, right? Like, you don't necessarily have to play someone who gets along with the party. You need to play someone who gets along with the table.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that, like, everyone who you are playing with is cool with however, like, that actually plays out. And yeah, this is one of the easiest ways to do it.
You might also see the party as useful idiots or a means to an end. And that could be your, you know, actual long, deeply held belief for the length of the campaign, which means that eventually there's probably going to be a confrontation. Or that could be sort of the metatext story of the game, is that your character's position on that will change, right? Like, the end goal for you will change over time, and therefore you don't have to betray the party by the end of the game.
Right. Or it could even just be like, you're a wizard and it's really helpful to have like a meat shield, and it's really helpful to have a healer, and you know, you don't like them, but you're pragmatic and it's really useful to like work with them and to like be a real team player.
Right.
And then consider in the party, what is your position? Are you the leader? Do you want to be the leader if you're not the leader? You want to be the leader if you are the leader, and are people keep trying to like get you to do different things, like not kill innocents or, mm-hmm. you know, give the money back.
Right. You might also be like a lieutenant or a sergeant or bosun, you know, somebody kind of trying to maintain the discipline and order of the group rather than necessarily make the command decisions.
Yeah, I think like lieutenant works really well. Like, it can be a lot of fun for a lawful evil character because you get more leeway in the things that you're allowed to do because you're not necessarily the one who's making the final decisions. But yeah, you, like you said, you end up being the person who is responsible for making sure that things actually get done, which means you can be more pragmatic.
Yeah.
All right. So pitfalls, just like any evil character, don't be the lone wolf that doesn't play well with other people.
Lawful evil is at risk of being an asshole alignment, so make sure that your character is not an asshole.
If you are going to betray the party, don't be the obvious traitor that everybody knows is going to betray the party.
Yeah, no one is going to truck with that because the suspension of disbelief is too great if you have the one guy who constantly betrays everybody, but we still tag along because he happens to have the PC tag on his sweater.
Right.
You should also avoid being the lawful stupid, but evil version.
Right. I hate all good things because I am evil, and I hate all chaotic things because I am lawful, and so I will smite as soon as I see you. Okay, it doesn't help anybody. And like we said before, like a great way to avoid most of these pitfalls is to just play as an actual real person who's just happens to be working in their own interests, but is inclined to follow the rules.
Yeah, and will likely try to either set rules or appeal to rules when trying to convince other people.
Yeah, you have the makings of being a great manipulator. Use that in your game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so some plot hooks for lawful evil characters. I like the character who is a noble representative of an evil society. So like your society is evil or like holds some evil beliefs, but you know, you have a personal code of honor and you are here in the party because obviously like the evil tyranny of like feeding Karnath. People to dragons. Yes. has to be represented on this mission. And so here I am.
Right. You could also be the kind of the flip side of that. You could be the evil representative of a lawful authority, right? Like the corrupt cop, or I suppose it would be like a constable.
Mm-hmm. I really like evil as a personality, not really an active alignment. So like you're just a regular character, like a regular PC who isn't necessarily super involved in alignment, but like your personality is. Yeah, yeah. you're a jerk. And like you're really annoyed when people like get out of line, but all of that is role play.
Right. You don't go around kicking puppies, but like sometimes you really like these idiots make you angry and you want to kick a puppy. you might also, you know, be the evil character who is fighting a greater evil and, you know, might have the promise that when this is all over, I will kill each of you. Like I will be the winner here.
Yeah, like Dread Pirate Roberts before actually revealing that he's not really evil.
Right.
He's like, hey, I'm definitely going to murder you, but I'll probably do that tomorrow because for now you're fun.
Yep.
And yeah, you could be the evil character who is an asshole to everybody except the party, because they're your friends. You get along great. You love these people.
Yeah.
But don't put you in a negotiating role.
Exactly. And then, of course, any type of quest that must succeed at all costs. You know, anytime the entirety of existence hangs in the balance, or the world will implode or whatever, that's a great way to bring evil characters into the group, where their evil is hilariously short-sighted if they don't succeed on the quest.
Yeah, I think it can be super fun to have that character who is like turning all the tropes on their head, because they're like, wait, what? Why would we do that? Why are we spending all this time like on these stupid side quests? Like, we have to save the world. Let's just go save the world with, like, let's take the giant laser and like destroy the castle. Why wouldn't we do that?
It's like it's like evil in absentia. It's like evil by omission. Like, by just declining all the side plot of the side quests, we've done no good here.
Perfect.
All right, so let's wrap this up pretty quickly. Ishan, you play lawful evil characters ever?
Yeah, Solomon the Stag, my favorite character of all time. The paladin of tyranny, who was geshed to be a good person to the end of his days by a Solar. He was like evil by personality, and I got to just narrate all the terrible things that he would do when nobody was looking, and you know, all the terrible things he did in his backstory.
Right.
What about you? Besides, you know, real life.
No, I play one in real life, so I got no reason to bother with it in games.
All done.
All right. Do you hear that, Ishan?
Yeah, that was me powering up the giant turbo laser. About an hour ago, though.
Okay. Well. Then we better hurry up and move on to the Character Creation Forge, because we're running out of time. Before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at TotalPartyThrill.
And join us on Discord, our latest community that we've started. The link is in the show notes.
So this week, Total Party Thrill is brought to you by Kobold Press. Empire of the Ghouls is the first 5th edition campaign from Kobold Press for characters levels 1 to 14, taking your heroes deep into the realms of the undead.
Inside Empire of the Ghouls, you will explore a kingdom of terror and blood that is ruled by vampires. You'll also explore far below the earth in the Underdark, where you'll find a mighty empire of ghouls, perhaps the aforementioned empire of ghouls in the title.
I think there's plenty of opportunity to play a lawful evil character in that kingdom ruled by vampires. The only problem with vampires and being lawful evil is that they don't typically have mustaches to twirl.
Right, yeah.
It's disappointing. Well,
yeah, the facial hair is the first to go when you're a vampire.
It's because facial hair is inherently good and chaotic. The massive 5e campaign will include new Underdark lore, as well as tons of undead monsters, magic, and more, with both an adventure book and a player's guide.
So this is available on Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter is now live. It ends Friday, May 31st. It is already funded. It's blowing away its stretch goals, as every Kobold Press Kickstarter does, and it is going to be awesome.
Yes, it is blowing away those stretch goals like puppies who are in your way.
Yeah, it just kicked those stretch goals right out of the way. Get out of here, stretch goals.
What if we start a funding site called Kick Puppy?
I think we would sell exactly zero projects.
Well, let us know if you're a VC firm or a hedge fund billionaire.
Or the SoftBank Vision Fund.
All right, so this week in the Character Creation Forge, it is anime. Shane, did you know anime started 2 weeks ago?
You snuck it up on me. A listener actually had to inform me that it was anime. And I was like, oh, that's sweet. That means I don't have to build any Character Creation Forges for the rest of the month. That was fantastic. It's like a treat.
All right, so this week we're building Vegeta, who is, of course, the Prince of the Saiyans from Dragon Ball Z. Saiyans are a powerful alien species that can manipulate ki and fire energy blasts fly or punch harder than any weapon. Of course, sometimes, you know, in later sequels, they get extremely OP because of power creep. But hey,
Is this a level 3,000, 9,000,
whatever thousand? That's it. This is literally the level 9,000 guy. It's over 9,000. That's him.
He's over 9,000. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what's the build for over 9,000?
It is Way of the Long Death Monk 11, Pact of the Blade Hexblade Warlock 9.
I appreciate that you didn't make this level 21 so that he would be over 9,000.
Oh, God. Well, let's make it clear. This is low level, early Saiyan Saga Vegeta, because by the time you get anywhere into Dragon Ball Z, you're dealing with, like, I don't know, level 4 million characters in D&D terms, because they're, like, blowing up planets with, you know, casual ease.
Good. I'm glad that we made that clear. Okay. That feels like a good disclaimer.
And also, early in the Saiyan Saga, that's when Vegeta is lawful evil, because he becomes an anti-hero later on.
Okay.
Yeah. Look, sit down, Shane. I'm going to explain all this.
Yeah, okay. This is our new podcast. Ishan explains Dragon Ball lore. Right.
All right, so from Monk, you get unarmored defense, which is totally wasted because Vegeta always wears his Saiyan armor, if you recall.
I do.
Yeah, that's, you do.
One of the things I know about him is he never takes his armor off.
You know, he probably would fit great into 40K because he has giant epaulets.
Epaulets or pauldrons? Because I'm not here for the epaulets, I'm here for the pauldrons.
I think all of the above. There are probably epaulets under those pauldrons.
Okay.
All right, you get a 1d8 unarmed attack, 11 key points to burn, flurry of blows, an additional 20 feet of movement, and evasion.
You'll also get an extra attack, and you'll get access to Stunning Strike.
From Way of the Long Death, you get temp HP when you reduce an adjacent creature to zero, and as an action, you can frighten everyone within 30 feet of you, which is totally a Vegeta thing, when he, you know, uses his gravelly voice to yell at everybody, and then, you know, casually threatens to destroy the Earth again.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the main feature from Monk of the Long Death will be spending a key point to remain at one hit point when you would otherwise drop to zero.
Yeah, this models the Saiyan's extreme durability. When we did Goku, we gave him Barbarian Rage, but I think this does a really nice job of it, because Vegeta is notoriously difficult to kill or, you know, keep dead. But he gets pummeled in this series to within an inch of his life constantly, and then always comes back stronger.
Same. So from Warlock, then, we'll get access to medium armor and shields. So that, I guess, will be your Saiyan armor. You'll have 5th level spell slots. You'll have access to things like shield and blur and blink.
So I think shield and blur, it's really nice to reflavor those as just toughness, right? Like a higher AC, like people hit you, it just doesn't hurt you at all.
Mm-hmm.
And blink is great because you have a chance to disappear at the end of your turn and end up in the ethereal plane, and then beginning of your turn you show back up. If you watch Dragon Ball Z, the way it's animated, everybody like moves faster than the eye can follow, and so like they're hard to target. So definitely play that up. Like you disappear. You don't go into the ethereal. You're just moving so quickly that no one can actually attack you. And you pop back up, of course, behind somebody and then punch them in the head. You'll get your Hexblade's Curse, which will let you crit on 19 to 20 and give you a damage bonus. And of course, if you're using Flurry of Blows, you'll get that damage bonus on each one of those attacks.
You'll be able to add your charisma modifier to your attacks and damage.
Now, that's with your packed weapon. So keep in mind, you're going to reflavor something like a short sword. Because you can't technically do it with just a punch, although there's not really any reason why you can't. And then you'll get five invocations. Take Agonizing Blast so that when you use your Eldritch Blast, which sends out multiple beams, that is your Gallic Gun, which is basically, for those of you who don't know, Vegeta's sort of signature move where he like fires a ton of like bursts of energy all at one time, and then, you know, he hits someone and it creates a giant smoke screen because of all the debris, and then when it clears, they are completely unharmed, and this is how we know that they are very tough.
You'll also take Eldritch Smite, of course. That's why we're here. That lets you spend your spell slots in order to add damage.
Yeah, on a punch, because you are a Saiyan, you punch very hard. And then take a look at Will Jump, because in, you know, the early levels, before you're actually flying all the time, you can jump good. You'll get At Will Levitate, which of course is you just, you know, monologuing while you're standing in the air, and then Life Drinker will add a bunch of extra charisma modifier damage to your attacks.
So in terms of leveling order, probably want to start Warlock 5, take all of your Monk levels up to 11, and then finish off your Warlock. So Ishan, who is Vegeta in your D&D world?
So my Vegeta is a little bit like the real Vegeta, and it's one of the reasons that I picked Warlock in the first place. Those of you who watch Dragon Ball Z know that in his quest to defeat his rival Goku, Vegeta finally realizes that he is unable to compete on equal terms, and so he makes a pact with the wizard Babidi, who gives him lots of additional power at the cost of losing a bit of his personal freedom. He makes a warlock pact. Mm-hmm. So my Vegeta is a monk who wants to be the Grandmaster of Flowers, tries to work his way up, and of course, Way of the Long Death, the way to do that is to murder everybody above you, to assassinate them, take their place, and continue to work your way up the hierarchy until you're in charge. But she realizes that she can't. She's pragmatic. She watches her enemies with a studied eye, with a scouter, you might say, and realizes that there's just no way that she can compete. And so she reaches out to a spirit of violence and death to make sure that she can become strong enough and, you know, to resist the murderous blows, the quivering palm of the Grandmaster, so that she can finally take him out.
Interesting.
What about your Vegeta?
So my Vegeta also starts as a monk, also would like to ascend to be the master of the Long Death. And, you know, as is the requirement in order to advance, must take lives. But my character is not able to maintain the discipline required to be really like a member of the Way of the Long Death. And so is cast out. And this is where Vegeta finds an ancient blade, which tricks him into some sort of dark pact, like some spirit is bound to the blade, tricks him into a pact. And instead of honoring the Long Death by maintaining the discipline and working within the order, now my Vegeta is collecting all of the souls required in order to advance to lead the order.
Is it seven of them? Seven souls?
I don't know, man. It's not like, it's not my order.
Are these souls numbered in some manner?
They're probably color-based. Okay. He's been stuck on Mauve for some time, okay? Just let it go. And anyway, so he must collect the correct number of souls, perhaps seven, in order to challenge the master of the order and thus destroy the order by using a blade to defeat their sort of empty-handed methods.
I love that you have basically recreated the premise to Dragon Ball without even knowing it.
Wonderful. Please kill me. Before you do that, let me just, my final words, let them be a thank you to our Patreon supporters.
Yes, your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week, and please don't take it away because you want us to stop.
If you'd like to learn more, you can check out our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill. All right, what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We are talking about dungeon crawls.
And in a character creation forge?
In another nod to anime and to fulfill a request from Discord, we are building the Stardust Crusader.
Well, that's it for episode 199 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.